Okay, we'll start. So we're going through a famous text. It's probably the most famous modern book in Tibet, modern meaning in the last 300 years or so. And it's called A Gift of Liberation Thrust Into Your Hands. And it was a record of an oral teaching by the teacher of the teacher of the current Dalai Lama. About 90 years ago, almost 100 years ago. And his disciple, Trijang Rinpoche, who's one of the two tutors of the current Dalai Lama and the teacher of my teacher, edited the book, and it became a classic in his lifetime. And it was carved in his lifetime, which is very unusual. And I think it's the best book on the planet right now, personally. And I really love it. And so we're in the middle of a rather long course of perhaps 12 to 14 years of going through it slowly. What do you call it? Savoring each word. We're making a video record because the level of Tibetan in the world is dropping quickly because of political events. And not many Tibetans speak Tibetan very well anymore. I called a monastery in Tibet, which I rarely do, to look for a book, and there was no one who could speak Tibetan to me except one old man. And so I would like to make a record of the meaning of the wording, okay? For the future. So maybe we're the last generation who will do that, I think. Okay. All right. Adam, I'm going to start just below where you have your dollar signs. Nyin Gepar. Next line. Yeah. So that Nyin Gepar means on the eighth day. So this teaching, I believe, is 24 days of teaching in Tibet. These guys sat there for 12 hours a day, 16 hours a day. They rarely got a bathroom break, and so we can do an hour or two. And we've reached the eighth day. We're in the fourth year of our own study. We've reached day eight, so we're about a third of the way through. It's a big deal to reach a new day, so congratulations. Nyin Gepar means on the eighth day. Then beginning a new section or a new day, Pabongka Rinpoche, who is the Lama who taught this book, he would try to remind people to refresh their motivation for coming to the event. Why did you come to hear this book? He will try to refresh everyone's motivation. Nyin Gepar means on the eighth day. Jadagni Chembu. Jadagni Chembo means what's Dagni Chembo? Mahatma. Okay, so he's calling somebody Mahatma. It's a Tibetan translation of the word Mahatma, and Jay means. But who you think? Who do you guess he's quoting? Yeah, Jay Tsongkhapa. So Jay means like Lord. And there are a couple of famous Jays in Tibet, but the big one for us is Tsongkhapa, who was the teacher of the first Dalai Lama and the founder of our lineage. So Jadagni Chempe means by him. It's the instrumental case or agentive case has been added to his name. So we're going to have a quotation by him. That's what it means. This particular quotation comes from a book called Lamso Namsum, which means the three principal paths. Okay, it has been mistranslated as the three principles of the path, which is a very gross mistranslation, and you often hear that. So just be aware. The word "so," the syntax of the word "so" is unusual, and it requires putting. It requires that you attach it to the word in front of it rather than the word after it. So Lam Tso means principal path. Okay. Then he has a famous verse by Jetsun Kapa, Kandasi be delama chakshin tangjo dunya chache tsumbayi gyawagepe lamna yitempe kandendeda tangwe yiki nun nyin. It's a very famous line. So the Lamsa Namsim, or the Three Principal Paths, is a work of 14 verses only. It fits on one page. And it is a letter, an epistle, that was sent to a disciple of Jetsun Kapa, whom he had sent, shipped off to eastern Tibet, like Siberia, with the task of founding 108 monasteries, right? And that was Tsakho Wumbo, Ngawan Drakpa. Tsakho Wumbo means the friar from Tsakho, like local priest. And he's the one who pulled off Geltsubje's hat, remember? Okay. So, Kandasi Bedela Machashi, please listen to these lines. Any one of you who is no longer attached to the pleasantries of this life, who is no longer attached to the pleasantries of this life. So, I don't know, today I had a really good enchilada. And El Molino, okay, in Scottsdale, if you're interested. It's like a takeout place, and it's the best Mexican in Phoenix, which is a big deal. And so, you know, I enjoyed it. Me and Scott and Nick, we were working at my girlfriend's house. She's 87. She broke her hip, so we were installing, railings for her. And we enjoyed it. So was I attached to the pleasantries of suffering life? No, because I shared it with them. I could have eaten it in the car on the way to her house. So why am I attached to it if I don't share it, and why am I not attached to it if I do share it? Yeah, sharing it is a statement in our tradition that I know where the food came from and where the flavor is coming from. It comes from sharing things with others. So that's not attachment. It's not wrong to enjoy things. All Buddhas do all day is enjoy things. And they're not attached because they know where they come from. So it's like a win-win thing. You get your cake and you eat it too by giving it away. Alright? Okay. So those of you who are not attached to the pain, why would it be pain not to share it? Yeah, I would kill the causes that created it. I wouldn't perpetuate the causes that created the enchilada. Okay, by sharing the enchilada, I'm assuring myself at least 10 more enchiladas. That's the math that you have to do in your head. Okay, all right. Next line: Tangjor dunya jajir tsumbayi. Please work hard to take advantage of the extraordinary opportunity you have right now. You have a body; it's working. Where was that? Somebody was talking about, oh, we took a yoga class yesterday. The teacher was a ballet dancer, ballet teacher. And so she mixed in some ballet. And then she said, don't worry if your muscles hurt. Just think how lucky you are to have a muscle. Or who was that? Oh, it was Aaron. Sorry. Anyway. Yeah, you're lucky to have a muscle. You're lucky to have a body, okay? They're very fragile. They get sick very easily. They catch cancer like nothing, you know? And the time that you have this body is not very long. You have the use of this body for a while, and then it will fall apart. So work hard, you know? Realize that every hour is precious. Every 5 minutes is precious. People make fun of me because I work in the car all the time. They say, don't you get a headache? I say, yeah, but it's better than being dead. So, okay. If you have 5 minutes in the car, do something with it, okay? All right. That doesn't mean you have to be, what do you call it? ADD. You know, calmly work on something in the car in the 5 minutes that you have. Okay. All right. Gyawa gepe lamla yitam pe means turn your mind to that path which pleases the Buddhas, okay? The victorious ones. Gyalwa means Jinna means victors. Kyaldan deda tangwa yikinyan. Deda, all of you, tangwa is a beautiful word, and here it's spelled correctly, which is unusual. It has a wasur, dvang, and it means crystal clear, like clear water. Like the water in the Bahamas or something, or a nice creek, which you can see the bottom, you know. Tangwai ye means mind. Nyun means please listen to this teaching. Please turn your attention to these teachings with a clear mind. And in Tibetan, the word clear implies faith, or faith born of admiration. Admiring these enlightened beings, then please listen with clarity. So it means clarity, okay? It means faith. And then he uses the word Kelden, which is a common Tibetan first name, Kelden. Lots of people are named Kelden by their parents. Kelden means those of you who have Kelwa. What's Kelwa? Kelwa means enough good karma to be here tonight. Okay, there's 5 million people in Phoenix, and I don't know, there's 50 here. You are one in what? 100,000? Okay, you are one in 100,000. You are Kelden. You are special. You have the karma to think it's worthwhile to spend a couple hours listening to this, okay? And that's very rare, extremely rare, okay? One out of 100,000 is not bad. In a normal city, we teach all over the world, and that's pretty good numbers. 1 out of 100,000 people is willing to spend 2 hours to think about these things. Okay, Kelden. Okay, you are lucky. You are special. You are special people. You have some kind of strange karma that you want to listen to Tibetan grammar and and meditation. You know, meditate on little lights in your body, like you're a Christmas tree or something. Okay, you're a really unusual person, as you may have noticed. Okay, I think good unusual, personally, but unusual for sure. So, Lung Dren Dang Che, Shepe Lung Dren Dang Che. This Dren is a different form of the word Tang, like Tange. So you know the word Tange, which means... it means to draw out the meaning of something. Tongue means to draw out. This den means Drenpa Lame Genden Rinpoche means guides, those who draw us behind them. Den means to draw. But draw can also mean, den can also mean to pull out a quotation or a citation. So Lung Den is an idiom that means to quote a book, to pull a citation, okay, out of a book. So as he opened the eighth day of teachings, Pabongkor Rinpoche chose to quote these famous lines from Jetsun Pakalpa, and to summarize them, listen with a pure heart, those of you who have enough karma to be here today, who have no craving for the pleasures of this life of pain, who are working hard to make your opportunity meaningful, and who want to focus on the path which pleases the Buddhas. Okay, that's he starts out by saying that. Now he's going to explain what that means. Okay, Kangba Dambo Gebu Dingi Yanda Betawa. Kangba means what? Leg. Okay, and what's a kangtung? Tung means to drink. What's a gangtung? It's a poeticism for a plant, a tree, because they drink through their leg. You see, gang. So you can remember gang, okay? Gang. But in poetry, kangba means a line of verse. One of normally it's a 4 or 6 line verses of poetry. So kangba means first. It comes from Sanskrit, which is pada. Okay. And pada came into pedestrian and pedal, and it means foot or leg. So it comes from the Sanskrit. The first line here is talking about the correct view of Kebu Jing, a person of medium capacity. Okay, So this teaching on the steps that you have to take one by one, you know, call it 30 steps that you should take, 30 realizations you should seek to become a Buddha in order, right? There are three levels of people who practice this, and they are called lower capacity, medium capacity, and higher capacity. So medium capacity people have a certain viewpoint. What is it? Sipe de la machang. Okay? They aren't attached to anything in this life. Okay? Like you could... It's not that... They don't even want the best things in this world. They want something more than that. Okay? They don't want the best car you can buy or the nicest house you can have or things like that. They're not interested. Medium motivation in Buddhism is that is you want something higher than that. Okay? You want to go higher than that. You want something beyond that. That's called medium motivation. Okay? Medium capacity. Nipa kebu chungu dantumu in lam. The second line expresses the path which is tumongwa with lesser motivation people, lesser capacity people. Yeah, tumongwa means shared. Okay? Shared is a very important word in this tradition. It means we are building on the three motivations, and it's not that we reject the lower ones when we get to the medium one. So motivation, the smaller, lesser motivation is a building block on what you, in which you put the rest of the wall, but it's not like you reject the lower motivations. Okay, what's the lower motivation? Dengjo dunya jachir. They want to get the most out of this life, out of this present life. They want to use this life for something beautiful. They want to make something out of the years that they have, the few years that they have here. They want to do something with it. Okay, okay. So that motivation doesn't extend to after they die, okay? They are focusing on this life, but they want to make the most out of the years that they have, okay? Which makes them lesser motivation, okay? Their motivation stops at the day that they die, okay? They're not thinking beyond that, right? Kangba sumba chanjugi semna jarwa. And then the third line reflects the attitude of a bodhisattva, highest capacity, higher capacity. Gyalwa gepe lamla yi tumba. Turn your minds to the path which pleases the Buddha. The path which pleases the Buddhas is the path in which you have a vision of saving the whole world, where you have a vision of saving every being on this planet. Bodhicitta, right? You have a higher motivation. You want to make every being on this planet happy. And that's your motivation. That's the highest motivation. So, and frankly, not just this planet. I mean, I say this planet because you don't believe in other planets, but one day in your meditation you can see the other planets. They are infinite. They are not countable. And in a deep meditation, you can learn to see them all at the same time. Okay? That's a beautiful thing. Like you see the fingers on your hand. Okay? Is it possible to see more than one finger? Yes. Is it possible to see all planets? Yes. Is there a number you can put on them? No. Okay? That's like something cool. All right. Kangba Sumba Chanyala Jana Sosam. Gone Mundo Kunlong Chupa. So he was encouraging us. He chipa our motivation, okay? He restored. He asked us to again remember, why did you come to this talk? Okay? Why are you reading this book? What do you want out of this? And everybody wants something different. Some people's motivation extends to having a life which has some meaning and not spending it eating and pooping and having sex and watching TV. Okay? Like they want to do something that has meaning. That's least motivation. And then some people would like to expand their vision beyond this planet and beyond this current life. Okay? They are thinking bigger. Most of us don't think more than a few days ahead. Most of us. We're not really very actively thinking more than a year ahead. Okay, it's hard to get Americans to talk about a five-year plan or a 10-year plan. Even the government doesn't do a five-year plan or a 10-year plan. Some countries do, you know. And we just don't have that habit. But a medium-level person is already thinking a lot about what they're going to do in the next life. Okay, this life is just a little part of their focus. Okay, it's not that they're ignoring the events of this life or they're ignoring the people around them. It's that their vision is bigger, is expanded. And then the biggest motivation, they're expanding it to all lives and all people. Okay, it's cool. It's a very wonderful thing to get out of the closet, which is called today, and look at the whole house. Okay, most people live in today, and it's very narrow. And very, most people live in the present moment, actually. Most people live in a 5-minute wide box. And then, you know, in our tradition, we're supposed to expand our mind to higher things, to deeper things. I'm not so worried about what happens this week. I'm worried about what happens in the next 10 or 20 years or 500 years. Like that. A Buddhist has a big vision. Okay. All right. Song Jae. So after he had reminded us to expand our motivation to something a little bit beyond what's going to happen this week, okay, which is not easy. You have to practice. Okay. Mundu Jitar Songwe Sache Nam Dren. He went over the Sapje. Okay, say Sapje. S-A-B-C-A-D. You got it there? Start dictionary entry. You ready? Start a dictionary entry. We're doing a video dictionary in for the next 20 years or so. So sa means earth or level. And je is a form of the verb chupa, which you know from Dorje Chupa, which is diamond cutter. So je means to cut. Sa means like a level. Sa che. It should be pronounced sa-che, because you don't normally pronounce prefix letters in Tibetan. They are like the K in I know what you're thinking, okay? But this particular word, if you're going to pronounce it properly, it's what I call an irrational exception. You pronounce the B. If you're cool, you say sap-che, okay? Sap-che, say sap-che. Then people say, oh man, your Tibetan's good. Okay. It's like, what's up? Okay? We have a translator from China, his name's Stanley. He learned his English from, we have two translators. One is Xiaoping, right? Allison. And one is Stanley. Stanley learned his English from American movies. Xiaoping learned her English in the university. So it's cool to talk to Stanley because he's like, what's up, man? And she's like, what is occurring today? You know? And, you know? So anyway, so if you say sapje, say sapje. Okay. Sapje means the general structure of a work of literature. Outline or an outline of a text, the categories of a text, and it's called subje. So, for example, one of the greatest books ever written in Tibet is the Lam Rim Chimul, which is the great book on the steps of the path written by Jetsun Kapa. The subje for that work, which is the outline of it, extends, I think, for 15, 20 pages. People memorize it. It's very common for people to memorize it in Tibet. I memorize the subject of the Lam Rim Chimul, okay? I know the whole structure of the whole Buddhist path is in my head. And then when you're bored, you're sitting on a bus, or you're waiting for your enchilada at Molinos, you can pull out the subject and start going through it, which is what kind of meditation? Shargom, it's called Shargom. There are three kinds of meditation. Jogom, fixed meditation on a single object. Chegom, problem-solving meditation. Why does my husband yell at me? And then Shargom, which is let me, while I'm waiting for my enchilada, And Nick just ordered another burrito. I'll go through the first 20 sapje, the first 20 pieces of the sapje. And that's cool. If you're well trained, you can sit there in El Molino and do the Lamrim Chamo sapje for fun, you know, while you're waiting, instead of reading the newspaper or something. Okay. All right. So Pabongkor Rinpoche went over the topics we had already covered. Okay? He's starting his eighth day. Then he said, Mushi Shinyan Tenzo ki sabche tambo da nyi pa nyi la kyar she nang. Kyar is an ancient word for again or repeat. Kyar she means he did a brief review of what? Of the first and the second sections in the outline of Shenyan Tenzo, which is the Ngushi. Ngushi means the real, what do you call it? The main act. The main course? Yeah, like there's the preliminaries and then there's the, what do you call it? The main, the main event. Yeah, main event is good. So we're in the main event. We finished the preliminaries. We're finished with Georgia, for example. We're in the main event, which is the real Lamrim. We started the first of the real Lamrims, which is what? How to find a qualified teacher and how to serve them properly. Okay. Moshi Shenyan Tenzul, the subject Dambo Da Nipanyi, he did a small review of the first two categories, which are Tembe Penyin, Ma Temba Dan Tenzul Lo Penyemik. Say Tembe Penyin. Tembe Penyin. Anybody remember what that is? Opinion. The benefits that come if you find a qualified teacher and create a loving and respectful relationship with them. There's a list of, I think it's six benefits that will come to you. Then he covered what? Yeah, he covered the opposite. What happens if you screw up that relationship? He expresses it in this way. Ma temba, either not trying to find a teacher, or tenso lokpa, find them and then mess up with them. So, in Buddhism, the most important task any Buddhist practitioner has to undertake in their life is to find their heart teacher. And it could be your mom or dad, it could be your high school girlfriend, it could be your dog, I believe. It could be a guy in a red suit. It could be anybody. It could be a rock singer that you enjoy. But you have to find your root lama, your heart teacher. In this life, that's the most important thing a Buddhist has to do. Okay, it's the root of everything. What do they call that? Yeah. Yunden Shir Gyurma. It's the root of everything. It's the basis of everything. You have to find your teacher in this life. And personally, I found mine. I was fortunate at a very early age. And I can say from my personal experience that it's the sweetest thing in your life. It is the sweetest thing in your life. If you find your heart teacher in this lifetime, there's nothing better. Okay? And I've done everything, trust me. Okay? And there's nothing better than that. Okay? There is nothing that compares. Nothing compared. Okay, kyarche nangte. De la sache dir mikpa kyongyu kone wangtu chepe. Ashenian tabe tsulke korde. In this particular Lamrim presentation, by the way, Lamrim means the steps to Buddhahood, right? Idiot's guide to Buddhahood. Mikpa kyong, that's an important idiom for you to learn. Mikpa can mean a lot of things. But here it means topic of meditation. Okay? It can mean a lot of different things, but here it means topic of meditation. Mikpa kyong means to practice bringing to mind different topics of meditation in a certain order. Okay? For years in your meditation. Mikpa kyong gyu. Gyu means present future participle, which are to be the topics of meditation which are to be reviewed in the next few years of your life. Kone Wang Tu Che means this particular book that we're studying, even though it's huge, it's designed only to present to you what you should meditate on. It's not designed to be a book of philosophy. It's not designed to be a philosophical discussion of theory. This book is special. This book is a string of meditation topics. It's not discussions of things. It's basically a raw string of things you can meditate on. Okay? Therefore, Che Pe, Shinyan Tapi Tsuki Kor, how to, now, say, beautiful expression here. Say, Shinyan Takpa. Shinyan Takpa. This is not the Takpa that means unchanging. That's RTAG. This is BRTAG. The meaning changes totally. This Takpa means Topa, means Vitarka, means examine. Check them out. Okay? A potential teacher. Takpa means check them out. Investigate them. Dig into their life. Okay? Before you commit. Before you take them as a teacher. Takpa. That's a very important word here, right? In this text. Very important. Shenyin Takpa means investigate a teacher's life and teaching and friends and students and lineage before you make the commitment to them. So can you go to their teachings to Takpa? Yeah, you have to. You have to. So, you know, sit in the back and, you know, like, Takpa, you know, like, how's everybody behaving in this group? And what's this person teaching? And are they practicing what they preach? And how's the harmony in this group? And like that, investigate, dig into, look on the internet and read all the blogs. And then compare them to what you see and decide whether they're valid or what's valid, what's not valid. And then make a decision about this teacher. But don't take a teacher lightly. Don't accept them lightly. In our tradition, you must find your teacher. But you are not allowed to take one lightly. You are supposed to investigate them. Okay? And again, to repeat, the period of 12 years is often quoted as the time to investigate a teacher. Like, I think 12 years in modern life is a little, like, I don't think it's practical for many of us, but it's not unusual in Buddhism to spend a few years going to a person's classes to see if they're the right person for you. And each person has a different personality, and we're all different, and we all respond to different teachers. I respond to teachers who are tough with me, and some people break down and leave. My Lama, every person he ever lived with left, except me. Okay, and it works for me. If you praise me too much, I get a big head and I don't listen. If you criticize me constantly, I try harder. And he criticized me for 25 years. I try harder for 25 years. But some people would leave after a week. They did. So everyone has a different needs and different personality and different, what do you call, propensities and makeup of your inner self. And you have to find someone who fits you. You have to find a good fit. And it means we also can't judge other people's choice of a teacher. You see what I mean? Because maybe they need that teacher. You know, maybe they need someone. There was a teacher, I remember, in my day, who really took advantage of his students terribly and charged them high amounts of money and made them slave labor. I'm talking digging ditches, building house after house after house. And sometimes he'd keep them, and sometimes he'd just get rid of them, and then he'd say, I need another one. And we were sitting there going, you know, this Lama's a little, you know, we're glad we have our Lama, you know. That lama's kind of crazy. But frankly, that lama's students came out very well. You know, those who survived the process became great practitioners of Buddhism in this country. They are some of the most foremost scholars in this country of Buddhism. Like Professor Thurman and Jeffrey Hopkins, and they all studied with this kind of crazy, to me, person who is kind of taking advantage of them. But they came out quite, he worked them very hard and they came out well. Okay? So, it just depends. So you have to check them out and see if it's a good fit or not, you know. Shinyin Takpe Tsulki Kor. Now the subject of how you should check out your teacher is not a meditation subject. It's something you do before you commit to your teacher, right? Therefore, de means delam, nyur means nyurlam. What's that mean? Yeah, so these are two famous Lam Rim texts. Delam is the path to bliss. Nyurlam is the quick path, shortcut. They were written by the first and second Panchen Lamas, respectively, in the 16th and 17th century. So in those two Lam Rims, they do not cover how to check out a teacher. Okay, because they're just focusing on meditation. But Jampel Shel, Sapche La Misel means it doesn't clearly or explicitly cover the Sapche, which relates to how to check out a teacher. What's Sapche? List of topics or outline, okay? Yang, but Jampel Shelung, the word of Manjushri, it's called the word of Manjushri. Shel means his holy lips. The words which came from the holy lips of Manjushri, which is another Lam Rim, which was written by His Holiness the Fifth Dalai Lama, okay, who's one of the most famous of the Dalai Lamas, sort of unified Tibet into a country, built the Potala Palace, for example, and was a great scholar of both Tsongkhapa and Nyingma traditions. He wrote a Lam Rim, which is very beautiful. And maybe in the next 20 years we can read that one. She Lung Le Juma Shin Diparna Chega. So, Diparna means at this point in your teaching your own students, okay? Because that's the system. It's a pyramid scheme. I had learned a new business term, multi-level marketing organization. It means I teach you, then you teach other people, then they teach other people. It's a pyramid scheme, right? Diparna means when you get to this part of the book with your own students, that means you, okay? With your own students, which you should have. You should teach people. I want you to teach people. I'm not getting up here to teach and then go away and this thousand-year tradition dies out because you didn't take notes. Okay? No pressure. Okay. Take notes. You never know when you might want to teach somebody, even if you don't right now. Okay? So take good notes. Diparna means, at this juncture, chega. You should go into how to find a teacher or how to check out a teacher. So there's a system for how to check out a teacher. There are things you're supposed to be looking for. Okay, this week we have to buy a car. I never bought a car in my whole life. Never, ever. And this year I have to buy a car for my teacher. This week, sorry. So we saved up the money for many months. We have the money. We're going out starting tomorrow, try some cars. And then I realized we have to have a list of what we want, you know, like it's got to be all-wheel drive. It's got to be big enough to fit their stuff. It can't use too much gas. It can't, for a lady, the main thing is it shouldn't have an ugly color. They should like the color. I'm thinking the tires should not be worn down. Or, you know, I have to buy new tires or, you know, like there's a list in your head of what you want. It should be fairly comfortable inside, but it should be modest because my teacher is modest. My teacher wouldn't want something, what do you call it? extravagant or inappropriate. Yeah. But she does like a little power sometimes. So you know, this is my list in my head. You should have a list in your head of the teacher that you want. Okay? You should have a list in your head. And what he's going to do is give you some traditional lists that have been presented in the past 2,500 years. And then maybe some of the items will be useful for you. Say, number 4 should be on my list. That's something I want in my teacher. Okay, so we're going to get a couple of very famous lists. One of them, the most famous one, was granted by Maitreya himself, the next Buddha. Okay, he said, here's a list of stuff, features that you want in your new car. I'm Lama. Okay, so here we go. Here comes the lists. I think this is the guts of this 10-day course. I think tonight and tomorrow are the guts of this course. This is what you really want to remember from this course. Okay, and this is what you want to teach other people. Because if people don't find a teacher, they will die. If they find a teacher but they don't check the teacher out, they will do worse than die. And they have to know what to look for. And if you're trying to help somebody, you should be able to give them some suggestions about what a good teacher looks like. Okay? Here we go. Deyang onang arshe patar shinyan tambala penyan dang. This is a segue, by the way, okay? This is a bridge to the new topic. He says, Ona. Ona means, well then, you have explained all the cool stuff that happens if you have a sweet relationship with your teacher. And, and you've gone over all the problems that happen if the relationship goes sour. But you didn't tell us what kind of teacher to look for. You know, you say if we have a good relationship, it's good. If we have a bad relationship, it's bad. But you didn't say what we're supposed to look for before we start the relationship. Could you tell us what to look for? Okay. Jita Bushik means, what the heck? La Temba Cha. Who am I supposed to have a relationship with? What kind of dude or dudess am I supposed to have a relationship with? Okay. Shena. What's Shena? We had it the other day. You may ask. Rhetorical question. Okay? Someone may ask. Who you talk about a relationship, but who am I supposed to have it with? Okay? First, Pabonk Rinpoche covers what's not enough. And then he covers what is enough. Okay? So first he's going to say a little bit about what's not enough, and then he's going to give us a list. Okay? So the list doesn't come right away. I'm sorry. Shenyan Deyan Kang Chungi Mi Chopar. Don't just take whoever shows up. Okay? Don't just take whoever you bump into. Okay? That's extremely important advice for Americans. Okay? Americans have this habit. They run into some teacher and they get all, what do you call it? Starry eyed, and they say, oh, I found my teacher. And he rings a bell. And you know, He rings the bell, you know, and you see it all the time. And they get all excited. It's called Angsar Tsapo in Tibetan. Say Angsar. Tsapo. It means initial excitement or something. What, we have a word for that? Huh? It wears off quickly. Infatuation, honeymoon. It's like a honeymoon. It's like you all get all excited. You know, he rings a bell, and he also has a neat drum, and then the next time you see him, he's like, you gotta give me $4,000 if you want this initiation. And, okay, like that. Initial excitement or something like that. Okay, there is an expression in English. I don't remember. Shenyan Kang Chung means whoever shows up. You know. Just whoever. Okay, start dictionary entry. Kang Chung. Kang means what, who, or where. Chung means happened. But as an idiom, Kang Chung means whoever just pops up or whoever shows up in your life, okay? And dictionary entry, okay? Michok. This chok doesn't mean ritual. We talked about it. This chok means it's not enough. It ain't gonna cut it. Chok. C-H-O-G, okay? Chokpa. Lam yong zogla chi nupa shik tengu. You must find a teacher who can take you through the whole path. The whole path from beginning to end, okay? They must know the whole path and they must be able to teach it to you. And that's a lot. The path is very long, very detailed. There are many things to know. And you must find one who knows the whole thing from the first day to the last day, okay? And that's a lot. It's massive, okay? Nyupa, someone who can teach. Ti means guide you. Take your hand and guide you from the first day to the last day. You have to find somebody like that. Nyupa means they have that capacity. They have that ability. Tengoki. Perna, for example, Tuk Shintu Samwat Samtabu Yunden Chok Rewa Shiki Lam Yong Zogla Chin Minu. And then he gives a very delicate example, I think. He says, if you find a very sincere teacher, but who's unqualified or incapable to teach the whole path, it's not enough. They can be very loving and very sincere and basically a person of very high integrity, but they don't know the whole path. Okay? Minu, timidu, they can't help you. It's not enough, okay? It's not enough to find a really nice person. You need someone who can teach you the whole path and is also a nice person. Okay? Both. Don't be satisfied with a yellow diamond or a black diamond. Okay? All right. Okay. Loma de ba dang she tsun dang yang. Loma de donga yonzo la nyen chen chu ma. Loma de ba dang she tsun den yang. This is very interesting. The disciple may be a person of great devotion to the spiritual path. They may be very interested in spirituality, okay? Depa Chimbo. They were born to practice the Dharma, you know? They were born to be a spiritual seeker, okay? And Shepa means extremely intelligent, okay? And Tsun means willing to work their butt off, willing to work hard, okay? You can have a disciple who's deeply attracted to spiritual things and very naturally wise and also willing to really work hard, but young. Lama de Donga Yonzo La Nian Chen Chupa. If that Lama hasn't mastered the open and the secret paths of this tradition, if they haven't mastered Dong Lak, Sutra and Tantra, meaning the open and secret teachings, all of them, Yong Zokla, master. If they're not, Ma Chung Tse, if you don't find someone like that, they can do Chi Dang. They can teach you all about faith, okay? Kyab Do, right? Shelter, give me shelter. You will hear more about that later. And Phlai Druptap, they can know some tantric practices, you know, how to call forth a tantric deity, sadhana, right? They can know individual topics well, but not the whole thing. See what I mean? Oh, they're a master at teaching refuge. Or they're very good at Vajrayogini sadhana, okay? Or Tsalung Gomba, they are very good on the inner body, chakras, prana. Lung Sa means nadis. They know the inner body, backwards and forwards. They are very good at the inner body. Okay? Tsalung. So Nyamlen Chog Rewa is the crucial term here. Chog Rewa means individual topics they may have mastered. Either a master of the chakras, or a master of a certain deity, or a master of some very foundational, basic thing, but they haven't integrated the whole thing. They're just good at individual things, okay? gomba nyamnen choreo na chik tsamna mitse shilpa jorwa. Shilpo is a nice word. I like it. Say shilpo. H-R-I-L. Shilpo. Shilpo Chepa means they could be a person who has devoted their entire lifetime to the chakras. Or they have devoted their entire lifetime to a certain ritual for calling forth a tantric deity. Or they could have devoted their whole lifetime to one of the topics of the Lamrim. But Dawa Topala Dunchampo Dupa Mingyur, you're not going to get the most out of your whole life if you just study with someone who's very good at one single little slice of the whole pie. Okay. You need someone rather who can take you through the whole pie. Gyurwe Shinyan Sinyi Samashi Tengu. So you have to find, say Shinyan Sinyi Sawa. Say Sinyi Sawa. Sinyi means what? Definition. Here it means requisites. The requisite qualifications. The prerequisites of a good lama. Great lama. Sinyi. Okay? Sangwa means they're all there. Complete. They have all of them. It's not that they just know about the chakras, or they just know about one tantric deity, or they just know some part of the Lamrim. They know all of it. And they mastered all of it from the beginning to the end. And they can take you the whole way through each topic to Buddhahood. They know them all. They mastered all of them. You have to find somebody like that, okay? Which is, anyway. Dei kyamdo chidang. Senyi kyang. Then he's, again, he's segueing. He says, Senyi kyang. What's Senyi mean again? Yeah, are the qualifications, okay? The requisite, the prerequisites to be a great lama, right? Senyi kyang. Then he bridges, he says, hey, let's talk about those qualifications. So that's what we've been waiting for me, for like 5 days. He's like, okay, so you got to find one with all the qualifications. Well, what are the qualifications? Tseni kyang here means, let's talk about those qualifications. So tagi domba bopa po dang changsem dang sangaki domba bopa po tseni so sosa mangyang. In the scriptures, many definitions or many descriptions are given. Many lists of qualifications are given in the scriptures at different levels of Buddhist practice. Okay, he gives some examples. Sotarki Domba. What is Sotarki Domba? Sosor Tarpe Domba. Prati Moksha Vows. Okay, Prati Moksha Vows. Monk's vows, nun's vows, novice vows. People who've left the home, ordination vows, lifetime layman's vows, vows to follow the 10 virtues, vows to follow your refuge commitments, those kinds of vows. The people who give you, who grant you that level of practice, the commitments for that level of practice, they have their separate qualifications. There's a list. You shouldn't take refuge vows from someone who doesn't have those qualifications. You shouldn't take monk's vows, nun's vows, lifetime layman's vows from someone who doesn't have all the qualifications of the traditional list for that. But that's just one list, right? He gives another example. Changsem ki domba, bokpa po. Bokpa, by the way, those of you who care, it's an unusual word, apostrophe B-O-G-S. Bokpa means to confer vows, okay? It's a strange word, unusual word, to confer vows, to grant vows. And there's a separate list of qualifications for someone who gives you the next level of vows, which is what? Bodhisattva vows. There's a whole separate list of qualifications for that kind of lama, okay? And there's a completely separate list for a person who's a Sangak Domba, Pokpapa, who grants you tantric vows. That's a whole separate list of qualifications, okay? So far we have three different kinds of lamas. One who can make you a monk, one who can make you a bodhisattva vow holder, and one who can teach you tantra, right? Give you tantric vows. Their qualifications are different. Those lists are different. Senyi sosor mangyang means there's a lot of them. young, but something hopeful coming here. But dear Lamgyi Rinpoche Yongzo Tunnyubi Shining Kitseni Tenpa Chala, what we're looking for in the context of the current teaching is a person who can take you through the whole Lam Rim. Okay? Someone who knows the Lam Rim well and can guide you through, I don't know, 30, 40 major spiritual realizations that you have to reach the goal. They've got to be able to trigger in you 30 or 40 major changes in your personality and in your life to get you to the goal. This person has to be skilled enough to trigger certain personality changes in you. 30 of them, or 40 of them, okay? Seni Tenpa Chala, and they can trigger all of them. They've done it many times. They know the order. They know how to work on you. They know how to get you to the next level of changes, transformation in your personality. Okay. Nyupe Shinyin Kitseni Tenpa Chala. So that's the list that we're going to be most concerned with here. That's the Lama. That's the qualifications that we have to cover here. Okay. In our current context. La Senyi Danden Miden Yang Maten Kone Tak. Very, 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 very important sentence. Okay. Here we go. Seni dang den min den, whether or not they are have those qualifications, yang ma den kone tak, before you commit to them, tak. Check it, analyze, rip them apart, investigate their life, okay? Check them out. Ruthlessly, okay? Like, find out. It's funny, I had the honor of teaching a very extraordinary Chinese teacher last week, and we were sitting having dinner, and he named all the places I've ever taught. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm like, I don't even remember, you know. And he's like, I'm like, he checked me out. You see what I mean? Like, before he ever talked to me, he said he checked me out for 2 years. He spent 2 years investigating me. You know, every time I want to tell him about something that happened, he's like, I know. You know? He says, I know and I love you. You know? And I'm like, okay. You know? And there's no confessing anything to him. Okay. Ten kone tak. Check them out. Lami, he did it. He's very unusual. Very, very unusual. He knows more about, he remembers more about my life than I do. Lame Tseni Tapa De Shenyan Tenpa Dupe Chawar Mase. This is not just the exercise of checking whether this person is qualified or not. It's not just something that those who wish to check out teachers must do. What's he going to say? I'll say it again. This exercise of examining whether a person has the required qualifications or not is not just something that those who are seeking a teacher should do. Huh? Yeah, those who wish to become a teacher. So the exercise of learning to examine another person to see if they are qualified should be applied to yourself later on in your life. Am I like that? How close am I to that? Because we all seek to teach. We all should teach. We should help others. That's the main way Buddhists help others. The greatest deed Buddha ever did on this planet was to speak the teachings. So when you go through this exercise of learning the qualifications of a lama, it's not just because you're looking for one, it's because you want to become one. And you have to start applying it to yourself. Do I have these qualifications? So he's encouraging you, as you learn these qualifications, learn to look at learn to look for them in others, but also begin to look inside yourself, whether you are working on developing them or not. You know, in theory, you don't have them yet because you are looking for a teacher. Okay, but you should be in the mode of what I look for, I also seek to be. Okay, all right. And that's beautiful. All of you should teach. Each person here should become a teacher. It's cool. It's what we do. Okay, it's our practice. We want to become a Buddha, which is a teacher. The word for Buddha in Tibetan is Thumpa, the teacher. Okay, so you should teach. You should be setting yourself up to teach. If you're shy, then just play rock and roll with us for a while. You'll get over it. All right. Tenpa Dipa Chama say, Dul Dong Lak Sungki Shenyan Chepa Dupe. If you have any dream of becoming a spiritual teacher yourself, of either dul, do, or ngak. What's dulwa? Valid morality, vinaya. Okay, like a basic foundation level teacher who can teach basic foundation level Buddhism, ACI courses, 18 courses, let's say roughly. Do means sutra, okay, open teachings. That's the whole 18 courses. And then ngak, tantra, the secret teaching. Ngak is the Tibetan word for mantra. It means mantra, tantra are basically synonyms, okay? So if you seek to be, don't just look for these qualities in other people, seek them in yourself. If you seek to be a teacher, check them out in yourself. If you seek to be a teacher, either at foundational level, or 18 ACI course level, or all 36 course level, open and secret teachings. Okay, kyang dul do ngak sung ki lame yenten nam rang la tsang ma tsang tak. You should tak rang la tak. Check out yourself. Okay, investigate you. You investigate you. It's cool. Whether you have those qualities, whether you have the yuntan, meaning the qualities of a lama, who can teach those subjects, okay? See if, while you're investigating a potential teacher to decide whether you're going to commit to them, you might as well look into yourself and see how far you have to go on each subject, okay? Tsang ma san takte ma tsang na, ma tsang na, tsang means you have all of them. Ma tsang. Yeah. Na. Rugo. I don't know why I remember that word. I can't remember anything else. If you don't have those qualities, okay, what's he going to say? Get them. Ma tsang na tsangwa ja. Then get them. Okay. Finish your ACI courses. Finish your tantric courses. Go through all the Lamrim teachings. Do all the meditation. You have them all. You're like weird people. You know? You're like one of the only people in history who have all of them at your fingertips. And you don't finish them. You know? It's extraordinary. It's like weird. I would say try to make it a goal to finish 4 courses a year. Okay? Every 6 months, try to finish 2 courses. Anybody with half a brain can finish 4 courses a year, okay? They're not hard. You can sit and listen to the audio in your car, and the homeworks are like easier than the Arizona State driving exams for people who ran a red light, you know? How many wheels does a car have? I swear, did you ever do that test? Did you ever get a big traffic ticket? Yeah, I did once. The cop was wrong, of course, but I was like astounded by that they could make a quiz like that. It's like, how many headlights does a car have? And stuff like that, you know. Anyway, the ACI courses are not much more difficult than that. So you should finish them. Really, you have to finish them. He's telling you, finish them, okay? He's telling you, finish them. If you work for DCI from this year on, you have to finish 4 a year or you're out. And some people are out already. Okay, some good people are out already. Okay, you have to finish 4 a year. If you have any that you didn't finish. Okay, who decides whether you finished? One lady from Colorado. Okay, and whatever she says is true. Okay, if she says you never finished the course, you never. As far as I'm concerned, you never finished the course. You know, people are always saying I did all the homeworks, I sent them in, they got lost, and I say you didn't pass. Do them again. Is it going to hurt you? You know, is that such a bad thing? Maybe it's a good karma that they lost all your homeworks. Okay, they lose a lot of homeworks. Maybe I even asked them to lose them. All right. Now you're in a position to learn the deepest, most beautiful things on this planet, and you're just insane if you don't do it. It's really frustrating for me personally. It took 14 years. It's 20,000 pages of translation. It was a bit of work. And it's there. It's all in English, and it's sweet, and it blows your mind. It makes you a wonderful person. It makes your whole life happy. Just do it. 4 courses a year, okay? 1 every 3 months. All right. We're going to take a break there. Okay, we have about an hour to go. And I think Esther might have an announcement. You want to do the big deal? Yeah. Like that? Okay, we'll start again. We have about half an hour, and I thought we could spend some of the time on questions if you have any questions. That was my Geshe exam. That was the last day. That's when all the high lamas come and debate with you, one by one. I was really nervous, but anyway, it went pretty good. Any questions? I think it might be. Yeah. A Todd?
Does this long rim go over a list? Does this long rim go over a list of the realizations that the teacher should have?
Todd asked, does this long rim go over the realizations that a teacher should have had? Yes. And we're going to get there shortly, probably tomorrow. Aaron? Yeah, I had a Chinese person ask me recently. They're very devoted to me. And they said, you know, some people you meet, they have all these qualifications, but sometimes you meet a person and you think, this is my heart lama, and they're not so qualified. They don't know Sanskrit, and, you know, they can't tell you the 10 this and the 12 that. And, you know, and how do we deal with that? So, at the level of your heart teacher, as we will discuss in detail, either probably at the next session, the next 10 days, but at a certain level, when you meet your heart teacher, then you are consciously developing an attitude, or you already feel an attitude where you believe they have been sent by the Buddhas to teach you, like that movie we saw the other night, and they have been selected by the enlightened beings, and they are an enlightened being, and they have come to teach you. So there happens this thing with your heart lama that the external qualifications aren't so important anymore, and they have. It's not that they mastered the Buddha's teachings. They taught them on another planet or something. They wrote them. And then you... Eventually you reach this place with your teacher. And you realize that. So they can't tell the 10 things or the 12 things, apparently. But you gain this conviction that they are the person who wrote them. And that's the result of a lot of hard work, that you meet them. Okay, that's all. So to other people, they may not appear to have those qualifications, but to you, they, without question, have those qualifications. And then there's something where it's kind of uncomfortable to try to tell other people why they have the qualifications, because they don't see them the way you see them. They might see them as a normal person. That's pretty common. You see them as a Buddha, and they see them as something else. And then it doesn't help to try to convince them that this is a Buddha, because probably to them they're not a Buddha, but to you they're a Buddha. You see what I mean? So something like that. Does that make sense? And by the way, that's very close to Tantra. That's really the Tantric worldview. Yeah, you're supposed to develop a Tantric worldview with one person, your teacher, first, and come to recognize them as an angel. And then it starts to spread to other people. And that's the practice of Tantra. Tantra isn't like sex orgies or killing chickens or all those things. Nothing to do with that. The practice of Tantra is to see one person as enlightened and then spread that to other people through conscious practice. Like that. Cool. It's okay. Yeah, I think, Well, I think it can happen both ways, frankly. You know, you can commit to a teacher and then suddenly they seem different. Like they're pushy and demanding and never satisfied with you. And my own personal experience, my Tibetan Lama was like that, and I just stuck it out. And then my vision of them changed, you know. But I stuck out a lot of years where they seemed mean to me or something, and then I changed my karma like that. So that's also possible. Like they look pretty good. You commit, and then they change, and then you can either bail out or you can stick with it, because in theory you can change anything. And you can change anybody. That's what we do. You know, sorry, I just got a Lama message. Hang on. This is the Lama phone, okay? Sorry. Okay. All right. We did a very nice interview today with Ukraine. We have a group in the Ukraine, and they asked, some radio, was it TV station? Online TV station asked for an interview about what to do from a Buddhist point of view. And we had a very wonderful time, and they were really happy. They're very frightened right now, and concerned is not enough. They're frightened, and they don't know what's going to happen. So we had a wonderful talk about how to change those seeds, and they were really happy at the end. And they think 10 or 20,000 people might see it. So Lama is saying, don't forget to do coffee meditation tonight. That's cool. Anybody else? Question? Ram? Is that distracting for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we...
So, in your kind of like your own experience, and did you ever find or did you ever struggle with the... Like, you ran into your Heart Lama pretty young, and then you ran into your Tibetan Lama. Did you ever have a... Did you ever feel a discrepancy at all? And then, how did you sort of... Or if not, how do you deal with that
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, so in my life, I met my Heart Lama when I was, I think, 17. And they are not Tibetan Buddhists. And then later I trained for 25 years. I lived with a Tibetan Lama. And then, and Rob's asking, did you have a discrepancy between how you viewed them? And if so, how does it reconcile itself? And I think I always had this very, I think I have really lucky karma about teachers. So I had this deep, deep feeling that they were the same person. And one day they met each other. And I was in the room and I was like, and it was like seeing someone talk to themselves, you know. And it was very surreal, you know. I was struggling to not go cuckoo or something. So in my own personal case, I always had some kind of deep thing from my past lives that I felt they were the same. But I... that's about all. It was a very similar experience. One, they were totally different people, completely different people, but I felt like they were the same person. So, and I used to also get confused about my boss at work and my lama, my Tibetan lama, because during the day I had my boss in the corporation and at night I had my lama. And I used to get confused between them. And like I would agree to do weird things at work, because I confused it with Lama's instruction, you know. And then later I came to feel that my boss was my Lama also. And that was kind of cool. And I still do. I still see... I saw my boss a few weeks ago. And I still have that feeling. So I guess there's a point at which you feel like your Lama's showing up as a lot of the people in your life. You know. But I... And in Buddhism, it's interesting, if you don't feel like that, and if that's not happening to you, you're supposed to make it happen. Consciously. And it's called Thakpa Nyanger, which means, that Thakpa is a different spelling, B-R-T-A-G-S, which means the yoga of make-believe. So you're supposed to get to the place where you see all the important people in your life as angels sent to you, consciously and artificially. They call it artificially, chimma. You are supposed to press the issue with yourself. You're supposed to change your seats until you do see them as the same. So I think in America you might think it was strange to pretend that your husband was your lama. Or that your boss at work was your lama. Like it would seem artificial to struggle to make them the same. But in higher Buddhist practice, that's very much a desirable practice, to try to imagine that they are the same person and to practice thinking that way is tantra. Okay? To practice the thought process that my husband or my dog or my mom might be Lord Buddha, and to keep trying even when they don't seem very Lord Buddha at all is tantric practice. That's what tantric practice is. And there comes a day when they all say, ha ha, we fooled you, you know, you know, like... And that's it. Then they say, okay, go, come with us. You know, we have to go to paradise. And you're like, cafe? And they're like, no. Somebody had a question. Yeah, Anatole. Pretty loud, okay, so people can hear.
Moments of deep meditation, or it could be a lot of blissful feelings,
think, so I'm old, I'm 61. I've been practicing since I was, I don't know, 21 with Tibetans. And so 40 years. And I've gone through a lot of phases, right, in my practice. Of course, in 40 years of hard practice. And I think my current thinking is that if you practice well, including yoga and meditation and self-analysis with the six times book of your behavior, self-analysis of your own behavior, and serving other people and study, is that if you are modestly regular in those things, so modestly means you don't go overboard, you don't do yoga for 4 hours a day, and you don't, you know, not sleep. You know what I mean? Like you follow a modest daily diet of certain number of minutes of meditation and yoga or a similar practice, channel practice, and serving other people. Like nothing big deal. Today we went to an old woman's house and fixed up her house for a couple hours. And we don't do that every day. We do it on occasion. But we do it joyfully and happily. And we're regular. We're regulars at our house. And then study, regular study. Just like, I don't know how to say, not as an obligation, but as a pleasure during the day. You know, like a half hour of study, something. And my current thinking is if you can get in those habits, which a big part of that is to be around other people who have those habits, you know. So like I'm around Orit and Scott or Anatole, or like I don't like yoga. I never liked yoga. I started yoga 16 years ago, and I've done it almost daily because the people around me do. So, and I do a book when someone around me pulls out their book. I'm like, oh, I'm the Lama. I better do my book. You know, and, you know, if you just do a modest daily practice, and I think a lot of that is being around other people who have a modest daily practice, just hang out with people who have a daily practice. And then you start to have anyone who has a modest, meaning not fanatical, but steady, happy, regular 15 minutes a day at anything, I think you'll reach a place where you feel happy about yourself and some kind of feeling of contentment. And that's the direct result of a regular practice every day without, what do you call it, anxiety, or I didn't do my book today, or instead of having anxiety about not doing your book today, just do your book today. Okay, you know, like that. That's how to get rid of that anxiety, you know, or the guilt that you feel when you didn't meditate. Just meditate, okay, and then you don't have it. And then this sort of feeling of well-being creeps up on you, and you just feel contentment, pretty constant contentment. And we all have big problems happening in our life. We had a big problem Sunday, right? And people were like writing me emails, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I had a good day. And it's okay. If you have a good practice, then you're just steadily happy, and nothing much can change it. And you just feel very, taken care of and loved, and you love yourself and you love others, and just that weird thing of a 15 minutes a day of meditation, half an hour a day of yoga, little bit of study every day, you know, taking care of some older person or sick person. And I didn't want to go yesterday. I was like, I don't want to spend my whole day screwing things in Mrs. Hancock's wall, you know. And then I got over my laziness and we went. And we had a very mellow day and a very beautiful day. And so I'd say that it's after 40 years of practice, how it feels if you're successful is that you're just quietly happy. And it's very stable and it's very steady and almost nothing can shake it, you know. So I think that's a good sign. People say, how do you know that your chakras are open or that your prana is moving or you're about to see emptiness or you're about to see the whole universe? And I have a feeling it's just some kind of quiet happiness. You know, when your chakras are really open, it's just some kind of gentle happiness, you know, and not much can change it. So, okay, and it's a very nice goal to have. I don't think there's so many firework things. You do have days like that. There are breakthrough days, but I think in the end, it's just this kind of quiet slide into paradise. Okay, maybe one more question. Yes, Bunny. Yeah.
And so Rob's question touched on it, and you gave a really lovely teaching in the Clear Retreat on the emptiness of the teacher. I just wonder two things. Why they don't present it that way in the long run? Because it seems that people really do make mistakes. When their karma changes, they think they discovered the truth.
Yeah. Step back 3 feet and see that the lack of that in the scriptures you have heard was created by you. Okay, seriously. Okay, and let's answer it on a conventional level. I think just a personal practice thing. We were invited to China by two or three very influential groups of business people who want to create a Uber company, like a huge company. They want to marry us, you know, and our company. And they want to help hundreds of millions of people. And then, you know, we were like going into those negotiations very kind of, not suspiciously, but like, how's that going to work out? You know, like, you know, what would that look like? And I was very conscious. We had 5 days of talks all day with one of the parties. And we were talking all day for 5 days. And I was very... something happened in my practice that week. And I said, every time I see something in this potential partner, business partner, lifetime business partner, every time I see the slightest thing that I don't like, I'm going to root it out of myself for 10 minutes. You know, like anytime I see something in them that concerns me, it makes me concerned about having a 10-year or 50-year relationship with them, business relationship, then I'm going to, rather than writing a new sentence into the contract that protects me, I'm going to think about, do I have this quality that I don't like in this? Do I have that? And maybe I could just, rather than trying to write a clever contract that covers all the possible problems that come up with them in the next 10 years, could I just fix them before we sign the contract? And I tried really hard for a week. It was very interesting meditation, 5 days, all day. And every time they looked a little greedy or a little, what do you call it, possessive or a little egotistical or egomaniacal, I would check myself for that. And then, like in half an hour, they'd start to shift. And it was really a weird, cool exercise. It was very, very cool. And by the end of the, at the airport, they did a full prostration before they got back in their limousine, you know. And I'm like, you know, on the floor of the airport, Beijing, Shanghai airport. And I'm like, wow, you know, something weird happened. And then they were crying and they were helping poor people. The whole thing shifted. So I think that's the case with your teacher. When you first meet them, you have a list of 10 qualities by Maitreya, which we'll get to tomorrow. So you have 10 qualifications to look for in a teacher. And then if they seem weak in 2 of them or 4 of them or 8 of them or 9.5 of them, then in our system, as Bonnie was pointing out so deftly, we're supposed to change them. And then we can commit to them. It's kind of cool. You know, like, okay, if they have 9 of the qualifications but they don't know the scriptures well or something like that, then you can either think that I'm compromising and I'm taking a 9 teacher instead of a 10 teacher. Or in our immediate tradition of emptiness, if I were to make a commitment to finish my ACI courses in the next 6 months, would they shift? Would their knowledge of scripture suddenly shift? You see? And the answer is yes, it would shift. You can make your teacher anything you want. But it takes intense awareness every minute you're with them that they are coming from you. And then it takes intense self-examination to shift whatever they don't have. And that's what I did last week. And it was a very beautiful exercise. Yeah. Yeah, the correlations. Yeah, the correlations. Like that. Like, what do I have to do to make my teacher appear this way? That would be nice. That'd be a nice exercise. We should make a practice out of that. We should have some kind of meditation. It's true that doesn't exist in the scriptures. That, okay, I'm going to sit with my boss. I'm going to work on my boss for the next 5 days and see if I can change their cheapness, you know, or the qualities you see in someone in your family that disturb you or that you don't like about someone in your family. And then say, okay, this is make my sister polite week. You know, and then work on them for a week. And that means working on yourself. That means changing something in yourself. And that would be cool. That'd be fun. Okay, one last question. Yeah. Rebecca said, how do you deal with seeing a shortcoming in your teacher and understanding that it's coming from a shortcoming in yourself? But doesn't that recognition imply a loss of guru devotion or a proper relationship with your teacher? I think the understanding is defective if it feels that way. I think if the understanding is clear enough that it's coming from you, you don't feel that way about them. You see, you don't blame it on them in any way. And what I'm trying to get people to really appreciate is that the Buddhist approach to dealing with a problem in another person. Try to deeply appreciate what's the Buddhist approach to dealing with a problem in a person that you know or that you have to be with, or is to very strictly examine yourself for that problem and let it be instinctual. That as soon as you see a problem in someone, your first reaction is to examine, how have I done that this week? Or how am I doing that to other people? And the closer you get to that being instinctual or automatic, then the less possible it is that you are committing an infraction of your commitment to your teacher. You see what I mean? You can see a bad quality in your teacher, but if your reaction is 100%, I must be doing that myself, then I don't think there's any bad karma about seeing it or admitting that you see it. But it's very, very easy when you're tired or upset or you didn't get your enchiladas yet today. It's when we are weak for some reason, we are tired or we didn't sleep well or we didn't do our yoga or something like that, it's very easy to slip mentally and start blaming them. But it's the same with your parents or your dog or yourself, right? Not just the teacher, right? But I just encourage you all to, and me too, I'm kind of into this mode lately where rather than trying to safeguard myself from problems I see in others, such as a potential long-term business partner, I'm into this thing of fix them on the fly. You know? Like, it's a cool... We gotta name that practice. Maybe fixing them on the fly. And you just dig right away into yourself and see how are you doing that. And then if the better you get at it, the faster they change. And then you can sign a contract without a clause. I got today a royalty statement from one of my publishers saying we really should finish up the contract for this book that we started 11 years ago. So we've been going like this for 11 years. He's been sending me the contract every year, and I've been like, yeah, okay, I'll send it sometime. And we don't have a contract, and the book's not copyrighted properly. I'm not going to tell you which one it is. We just didn't bother, you know? Like, every time we decide to do it, we just don't do it. Because we don't really care to have a contract, because we love each other, and we never had a contract, so. But it's weird, because it's a lot of money, and, you know. So, anyway. We gotta go home. I gotta send them home. But we'll do it tomorrow, okay? Tomorrow evening. Okay, schedule tomorrow. Last time we met in Phoenix for 10 days, we did the Jorcha, which is called the meditation song. And this is an ancient tradition of preparing for a meditation session by going through a certain number of like a confession and a rejoicing and an offering. And so we were playing around last session with each person making an offering of song or poetry or a dramatic performance or whistling or whatever they know how to do. And especially things you're not so good at or maybe you never tried before. So some people who had never acted did a beautiful performance, and some people who had never danced publicly, like did a poetry reading. And somehow we all broke out of our self, what do you call it? Self inhibitions or something. Like, you know, somehow because we all did it at once, it's like everyone took off their shirt at the same time or something. And everybody was like, okay, I'll sing something or I'll do poetry. I'll stand up and look weird, or not weird, but I'll risk embarrassing myself because we'll make it an offering. Rather than a performance, we'll make it an offering. So I'm going to get up and do something and offer it to the Buddhas of the universe. And they don't care if I'm a little flat or sharp. You see what I mean? They're just grateful that I stood up and made an offering. And somehow last 10-day session, everyone was able to get to that mind state of, okay, I'm not a great singer. My fifth grade teacher told me I can't sing. But I'm going to sing a song. And I don't care if it wouldn't sound good on, what's that show? American Idol. I don't care if it wouldn't win American Idol. I'm just going to do my favorite song off-key as an offering, karaoke to Lord Buddha. And I'm not doing it for me, and I'm not even doing it for my fellow participants. I'm just doing it for the Buddhas. So they're happy with anything. They're very accommodating. And as long as you get up and try something. So anyway, I really encourage you, Sunday we will do like a two-hour thing. And, you know, just think of something that you'd like to do and do it, and you'll feel so happy. And it's such a beautiful thing to offer something to invisible enlightened beings. It's very healthy. It's extremely healthy. And then between now and then, we'll be having special periods of the day when you can practice. And you can go in a room by yourself or with a bunch of other people. We were practicing a Rolling Stones song for 2 hours. And the choir here was practicing in the next room. And we were a little louder. And we had a full drum set and everything. And then it was funny, the choir director came over and she kept looking in the window of the, and I thought, I hope they don't throw us out, you know. And then finally she plucked up the courage to walk in and she said, I'd give anything to be in this room. And she was over there trying to do this. You have you have like 4 days. And join some little group and do something. And don't be, I think a lot of shyness is pride, you know. And just think, I'm going to make an offering to the Buddhas, you know. Anyone who wants to sing in our band is welcome, okay? We have many people who never sang before. And it's very, very, right, Hasonno? It makes you so happy to do it, you know, just do it, you know. So you're very welcome to do anything, yeah. Yeah, if you want to do an offering, I would say poetry or music or anything, dance, then talk to Aaron, even if you don't have time to come and rehearse, okay? Just do something. It makes you so happy. I hope you do it, okay? So that means that's based on a text that we never finished last time. We didn't finish going through the Jorchu and explaining it to you. So I had an idea to stretch it out and just teach you Jorcha for like half an hour, an hour, each session, each term. And that means we'll have to be doing these silly offerings interminably, which I kind of really enjoy. So I'll teach you some Jorcha meditation song, which is the traditional preliminary to meditation. But we'll just do a little bit of it so that we can stretch out the experience like for 4 or 5 years. And then we'll probably have to start over. So the reason I'm mentioning is last two sessions here and in Guadalajara, we gave away those books. We gave away the Jorcha books. They cost $30 each. We gave away a couple hundred. We gave away 300 or 400, I think. And the party's over. So first of all, I'd like to encourage you to bring your copy. And if you don't have a copy, we'll have them for sale. We just can't afford, it's like $10,000 and we can't afford it. So dig up your copy from Guadalajara or from, and it's in English, Spanish, and Chinese, whatever is your language, you can do it. And then I'm going to ask you to pay this time for the books. I think we're going to make them cheaper. Like, how much are they going to be? I don't know. That's cheap?
No, it's cheaper than
about
the last
18? We'll talk. Okay. We can't give them away. Yeah, you're welcome to have a free digital copy. You're very welcome to have a free digital copy. So maybe we can put it up online somewhere. Well, we'll give you the link. And you can put it on your laptop or your iPad for free. It's just that the color copies are expensive. And But I'm going to ask you to buy one if you want a hard copy, you know. And if you're like really broke and you're dying to have one, then talk to me and I'll squeeze one of the sponsors, okay? But in general, if you could pay, if you've lost yours or you never got one, it'd be nice if you paid for it. If you want it on your laptop, it's free, and we'll give you the final printing copy for free, okay? Yeah. Say again. Oh, yeah. What day will they be ready, Chingy? Like what? I would say this. I'm suspecting Friday night we'll do Jorcha. Bring it on Friday. Bring it, have it with you on Friday and Saturday. Okay? And if you don't have a copy and you want just a digital copy for free, you're welcome to take that. It's the color laid out copy for free, and you can have it in 3 languages if you want. So cool. Did we do the Gewa? Yeah. Okay. Good night. See you tomorrow at 9:30. Okay.